we welcome you into another edition of Gateway to Baseball Heaven, the last gateway for the month of April 2018. And unfortunately, Tara and I are not coming to you with the greatest of news, given the fact that the Cardinals just got swept by Pittsburgh and did their darndest to make history with a rookie pitcher on the mound. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. Let me introduce everybody. Of course, you know Tara Wellman from Birdseeds and Birds on the Black and all the About Last Night and the series previews. And you can watch Tara all the time, which is cool. You also know.
Is it, though?
I think it's pretty cool. I mean, you know, it seems to be, I think, you know.
Well, that's good.
I mean, granted, it's much better to watch you than it is to watch or listen to me. So I think people get the. When it's in comparison, at least, it works out pretty well for you.
I don't know.
And you should know, I'm Daniel. Shop from C70 at the Bat and at C70 on Twitter, and we do this all the time. So, unless you're a brand new, you know this. And if you're brand new, very welcome in. We're glad to have you. Okay, Tara, we bandied about long enough. I guess we really should talk about this. The Cardinals had it felt like a good week. Of course, we recorded on Tuesday with Alan Medlock. We had the special edition show that crossed over with the Meet Me Mutual. But, you know, the Mets, they lost the first game to the Mets, then won two more, especially that second game, the last game, in fairly dramatic fashion, only to go into Pittsburgh and blow a huge lead on Friday. It never really looked like they recovered at all on Saturday and Sunday. Are we still not, you know, we're a month into the season. Have we really not gotten a handle on what this team really is yet?
I think that's probably fair, although I would say, you know, the Cardinals were real close to sweeping that series with the Mets. They were real close to not getting swept in the series with the Pirates. So I feel like the odds are the reality of the 2018 Cardinals is somewhere in the middle of that. But it's sort of the unwanted identity of this team that for the last several seasons, they surprise you with how capable they look and then follow that up by surprising you with how incompetent they look. So whether that sort of averages out over the course of a season or not, I don't really know. What I do know is that it's extraordinarily frustrating to watch because, you know, just when they seem to turn a corner, just when you seem to think, okay, they beat someone that wasn't the Reds, maybe they're actually going to be all right, then they play another division game that's going to be very important down the stretch. And the Pirates are a team that doesn't quite know who they are yet either. And the Cardinals really let them get away with a couple of wins that that the Cardinals need to be able to take if they're going to be a team that competes for a wild card spot, much less for the division.
Yeah, I mean, that's hopefully you got to hope right now that Pittsburgh isn't this good, that Pittsburgh is more that team that we thought they were at the beginning of the year, that would be, you know, a fourth or fifth place team after losing Gerrit Cole and Andrew McCutchen, and they very well may be. I mean, we don't know, but you don't want them to be this team that's as good or right there with the Cardinals in these three games, you know, become a difference maker. But they very well may could be. I mean, and that's going to be very frustrating, especially when you talk about that game on Friday night. Cardinals get a great start from Miles Mikolas. Another one of his great starts. You know, we talked about it, I think, a little bit maybe on that show, but definitely remember that, you know, Bill DeWitt talking about how excited the scouting department was about Miles Mikolas, feeling that they really had something here, and he seems to have shown it. You know, two runs in seven innings, just all around, you know, very good outings from him every time out. And then you take that 7-2 lead to the ninth, and you turn it over to Greg Holland, or 5-2 lead, sorry, 5-2 lead to the ninth. You turn it over to Greg Holland, who has been pitching well, better of late. Let's put it that way. I think well would be fine, but it's also a small sample. And he can't get it done. I mean, it completely we could talk about the fact that he might have, you know, the defense might not have helped him some, but he just did not look good. And I think we're starting to run out of this time where we can say this excuse of he didn't have spring training, because we're a month into the season. He's pitched about as regularly as maybe he would have anyway. I think you've got to start seeing production out of him.
Yeah, and I think the question is how you get him to that point. Whether it's a matter of not having had spring training or if he's just in a rough spot right now and he can't get it right. Either way, putting him out there in significant innings, or even, I mean, when you're out there in a 5-2 game, it's not exactly the most high pressure or high leverage situation. You should be able to even work yourself into a little bit of trouble and then work out of it without blowing the save. So, you know, it's hard to watch him because it's not like he's able to make those adjustments that you would think someone with the experience he has, someone with the pedigree that he has, would be capable of doing. And it's really difficult to figure out where that's coming from. If it's still rust at this point, they may have bigger issues. And if it's just something that's mechanically not right, or if it's, I don't know. And I'm not necessarily the the pitching expert that's going to watch him and point out, this is what's wrong. Mm-hmm. Because if I was, the Cardinals would probably pay me to do that. especially the way that the bullpen has gone this weekend. But, you know, he went out there and blew the save in that game against Pittsburgh. He went out there again today in a game that was pretty well out of hand and still gave up a run on three hits and didn't look great out there today either. So defense is a part of it. Defense was a problem throughout this series. But if you're going to be the closer, if you're going to be the guy at the end of games that can handle the pressure, that can handle a little bit of trouble, that can find a way to get it done, Holland just doesn't seem to have that right now. And that's a problem for a bullpen that looked pretty good about a week ago. And today we're all sort of scratching our head thinking, I wonder what we're going to do, how they're going to make something of this.
But look, As ugly as that outing was, as that day was, I think you got to give some credit not only to the rest of the bullpen, but even to Mike Matheny. You know, Greg Holland gives, you know, the game is tied and the go-ahead run is on third base with nobody out. And I think in years past, we would have, you know, he might have stuck with Holland, figuring he could, you know, maybe work his way out of it. He didn't. He went and got, and he did, what, three pitchers for three outs? He made the right moves that he needed to make, and they stranded that runner, giving them another chance, which, you know, they weren't able to take advantage of. But still, to see that, I mean, that's when you see that, yeah, this bullpen can work. This bullpen has tools out there. It's just about the time you start to think you're going to have some confidence in one of them. They hit this skid where they can't get anybody out, and I don't know. You know, I don't know how to even fix that, because it's like these guys can be good. These guys on the whole should be good, except and have been good, except for maybe Greg Holland. But maybe Luke Gregerson, who hasn't pitched a lot but has struggled some too. You start looking at it, and it's like, what do you do? I mean, because like you said, you know, we're not the ones that are going to sit down and we're not going to be Joe Schwartz and figure out, you know, why the pitch isn't working and what they should be doing. But even just looking at it from a roster standpoint, you know, it's very difficult to see how they can change the look of this bullpen with so many people fixed. I mean, we've seen that last spot rotate. We've seen the Cardinals go back to eight relievers now. This week, as Tyler O'Neill went down to Memphis. But that spot has, you know, Austin Gobber is now taking that spot right now. We'll see how they use him. It's just, except for that little bit of roster turn that you can do at the end of it, there's no real good solution to this.
Yeah, and it's not as if the guys that are having the greatest trouble are the ones that you can just easily send down to Memphis. It's not like it's been, while Mike Myers has had maybe not complete success the way that he'd like for it to be. I'd say compared to his last major league experience, it's been a delight. But, you know, it's not been Mike Myers. It's not been John Gant. It's not been, you know, any of these guys that have come up for that game or two and then ended up pitching three innings because the club needed them to. It's not been those guys that have been the issue. The ability to sort of move guys in and out like that is one of the benefits of the way that the Cardinals have taken advantage of the system, but it doesn't really solve the problem. It's sort of a way to maybe stop the bleeding in the moment, but you're looking at guys like Luke Gregerson, you're looking at Greg Holland. Even this weekend, we saw Jordan Hicks look human. And these are guys that you started the year thinking were going to be sort of the backbone of your bullpen. I mean, let's be honest. At one point, Luke Gregerson was slotted to be the closer. let's just imagine that scenario for a minute, because as bad as things have been this weekend, I feel like they could have been worse. Not that Gregerson would never have been able to figure it out, but he has looked fairly pedestrian in his limited appearances as well. So there are a lot of moving parts. There's the fact that Sam Tuivasa is coming back, Brett Cecil is coming back, Ryan Sheriff can be in the mix. But then you're dealing with guys. I mean, Tui doesn't have an option left, so he's either going to be on the team or he's going to play for someone else. So, you know, that takes up one spot where you can't play this Memphis to St. Louis musical chairs game. And it gets complicated and convoluted very quickly. You know, I know that John Mozeliak likes to say you can never have too much pitching, but the trouble comes when the pitching that 100% has to be on the major league roster doesn't necessarily give you the best chance or the best mix of guys in the bullpen. I was saying today, the challenge with Greg Holland is that he's not going anywhere. They gave him $14 million to be the closer. So whether he's pitching in the ninth inning or he's pitching in the eighth inning or he's pitching in mop-up duty, he's not going anywhere. And they're going to give him every possible opportunity to get it going. And the reality is that might cost the Cardinals some games. And it might cost Mike Matheny any, you know, I was going to say goodwill, but I don't know that there is any of that left. You know, it might add a few more people to the picket line outside of John Mozeliak's office. I don't know. He's not going anywhere. When Brett Cecil's healthy, he's going to be on the major league roster. Guys that don't have options, they're going to be in that bullpen. And then you're limiting yourself to the guys you can move in and out just because there's not enough spots. And then we're likely going to see Mike Matheny go right back to his tendency of having that extra guy in the bullpen and never seeing him get any work. So it seems to be what looked like it was becoming a strength for the Cardinals is definitely showing some cracks in the armor. And the unfortunate reality is, whether it's Greg Holland or Jordan Hicks, trying to fix whatever is going wrong with these guys on the fly when the Cardinals are more often than not playing in close games, you know, the results are not just a matter of earned run average. They're a matter of actual records, particularly against division rivals.
Yeah, it's a mess all the way around, and it's not, you know, there have been times this year that it's been exasperated by Mike Matheny's usage of guys. You can look back to that Saturday, a week ago Saturday, when they brought in Tyler Lyons, and that didn't work out, and everybody knew it wouldn't. But, you know, for the most part, I don't feel like it's been that he's made. I mean, he's made some bad moves, but that's not why everything's falling apart. I mean, you bring Greg Holland into a game like that, that's why you pay him $14 million. Maybe you pull him a little earlier, I don't know, but you still felt you had a 3-run lead, and all of a sudden you didn't. Let's talk a little bit about Jordan Hicks. You brought him up, and we have seen him, you know, be touched up a little bit this week. Not that he's been hit just ridiculously hard or anything. And again, I think he's had, you know, there's been some defensive issues behind him as well. But, you know, he's still not striking people out at a real high clip. He's walking a number of people. And batters are putting the ball in play, and that's going to tend to be a problem eventually. You know, we've talked when it happened, we've talked since then about, you know, what this does for his development, how long does this last, you know, a guy that's barely pitched at a ball. It's kind of like Mag Sierra last year, you know, came up and he hit 500 or whatever for that week, and then didn't do a thing the rest of the way, and went, you know, was sent back down, and everybody was like, why are you sending him back down? And then we see that he's got like 3 hits in AAA for the Marlins this year, and you kind of get an idea of why they didn't hitch their wagons to him. When, and I feel like it's going to be a win, and maybe you can correct me if you don't, but when Jordan Hicks goes down, I mean, where does he go, and what does he go as? I mean, is this a place where the Cardinals are going to say, okay, this has been good, but let's get you back to being a starter, or are they thinking that he's going to be this bullpen piece forever, and they're going to go ahead and let him be that way so he'll be ready to go that way when they need him later in the year?
Yeah, you know, I see this a little bit like the Alex Reyes situation, and I'm sure we'll get to that eventually, but the Cardinals seem to think that Jordan Hicks at his best fills a need for this team in the bullpen. I can't imagine that they put him on this team out of spring training at the request of Yadier Molina if they don't feel like he fills a spot in a way that someone else can't. Because there are guys at the AAA level. I mean, the Cardinals have had great pitching prospects for years. It's not like they can't develop pitchers in Memphis without Yadier Molina. But I feel like they see the skill set that he has right now and see a way that that translates into something that they don't have out of anyone else in the bullpen. They don't have Trevor Rosenthal to go throw 100 miles an hour when he's, you know, actually healthy and his arm isn't falling off. But they what they have in the ceiling of Jordan Hicks, even right now, not necessarily the ceiling 3 years from now if they continue to develop him as a starter, it gives them something different out of the bullpen that no one else brings. So I think the reason I related it to the Alex Reyes situation is that to some extent I feel like it will depend on how much the Cardinals see there being a need in the bullpen. Now, I do agree. I think that at some point this season, whether it's because Brett Cecil and Tui come back at the same time and Jordan Hicks has struggled for 3 or 4 outings in a row or whatever the case might be, I think he's going to need time at Memphis because he's young and he's going to get out of whack. And he didn't look the same today. They're messing with his windup a little bit and he didn't have the... Yeah, anyway, there's a lot going on there. There are a lot of moving pieces to a guy who has just recently developed a 100-mile-an-hour velocity on his fastball, and he's going to need to get things figured out at some point, and not do it at the expense of major league runs scoring. I mentioned today on Twitter that this was the risk that John Mozeliak was willing to take because these innings, these last couple of outings, are critical to the development of Jordan Hicks, to watch him get into trouble, to see him not get out of it so that he can learn from that, so that he can go back and figure out what he did differently that time than he did in the game where he got his first major league win. You know, all of those things are part of the development process so that you can fail and learn how to not make that mistake again. But those are not typically things that you want a guy doing at the major league level. So at some point, if that continues, and I can only assume that there will continue to be times where Jordan just is in a situation he's never been in before, and maybe is dealing with some mechanical thing that he hasn't quite figured out how to adjust on the fly before, whether he's throwing to Yadier Molina or Carson Kelly or the backup catcher at AA, it doesn't matter who he's throwing to. If it's something that he hasn't experienced before, he may not have that knowledge to draw on to fix it in the moment. So you know, Zach Gifford has talked a lot about the spin rate on his fastball. There's a matter of command when he isn't hitting the strike zone. And we've seen that a lot more in the last couple of appearances. And, you know, major league hitters are going to be able to time up something upper 90s or 100 miles an hour. It's just finding a way to create that weak contact that John Mozeliak was talking about last weekend. And all of those things are part of the development process when you're a guy who's never pitched above A ball. I mean, Kyle Reese was talking about it when we did the Periscope from Bush, and he was saying, look, this is a kid who had to learn how to miss bats at A ball. Then typically you would learn how to miss bats at double A and then at triple A and then at the major league level. And there's a distinct difference in how you do that, how you approach that, what the process is, what your skill set needs to be. And he sort of came out guns a-blazing out of spring, and that was great, but he's going to have to learn how to make those adjustments. And I don't know how long, particularly with a bullpen in flux and guys coming back who have to be on the major league roster, you can allow him to try to learn that on the fly.
Yeah, I can't see, you know, Alex Reyes is available to come back, I think, the 28th of this coming month, May. If not, you know, say June 1st, even though that gives you a little bit of cushion. If Jordan Hicks is still on the roster by then, I would be very surprised, because you're right. There's too many bodies coming, and he's not showing that dominance that we feel like he should be showing, especially for a guy that throws 102 or whatever. There is that learning curve that he still needs to go through. I think that'll be very interesting to see where he winds up and what they decide to do with him. You know, I could easily try to get him built back up into that starter role and let him pitch those innings. But they may think, you know, with all the pitching that they have in the league, that they're ready to change him over to try to be that kind of closer guy. I don't know. Probably at least you get him away from Mike Matheny, which is not always a bad thing whenever that happens. But again, I mean, there's no telling when that will actually go around to happening. You know, obviously, with the extra inning games and with other issues, you know, the Cardinals have felt that they need that eighth reliever again. But, you know, at some point down, they might go back and get that extra bat. We'll see if that happens. But not anytime soon, probably. We've talked about the bullpen. Let's talk a little bit about the starting pitching. You know, Carlos Martinez is looking like what we thought Carlos Martinez should be. He's got an ERA of 1.43. And you remember how bad he, you know, that first start against the Mets was so bad. So, you know, how great he's been since then. We've talked about Michaelis. But then you get into, you know, Michael Walker kind of feels like he's hanging by a thread, but he's doing, maybe the last couple of starts have been a little bit stronger. But then you look at Luke Weaver, you know, pitched today, gave up four runs in, I've forgotten it, five or so innings, and it has an ERA of 5.17. This is not what we thought we were going to get out of Luke Weaver, especially after the spring, but even to start the season with, you know, a couple of good outings, it just feels like it's all kind of falling apart for him all of a sudden.
Yeah, he looked a little better today, but even then, you know, he's putting himself in jeopardy, if you will, more often than I would like, probably more often than he would like. And he's another one. If he's not missing bats, he's going to get himself into trouble. And the last couple of outings, he's looked far less like the guy we saw in the spring. And he, you know, the thing about Luke Weaver is that he's still young too. He's still learning how to be that guy. You know, he's still learning how to adjust when guys sort of have your number and what to do from there. So, you know, if he's feeling a little bit off, if he doesn't have his best stuff, if he doesn't have all of his pitches working on any given start, you know, he doesn't have that wealth of experience to reach back into either. So I'm not particularly worried about Luke Weaver yet, but I do think that the trend is a bit concerning. Although I will say, I don't know that it's really fair to try to expect Luke Weaver to be the number two on this team at this point in his career, or just based on sort of what the projections for him are. But that's sort of the position he's in, like it or not, fair or not, and that comes with a lot of pretty high expectations as well that, you know, they'd be hard for anyone to live up to at this point in their career.
Yeah, and you know, we look at it right now, I mean, I would guess, given the fact that they sent Jack Flaherty back down, they expect Adam Wainwright to be ready for his next start. But that pulls back again to the Alex Reyes question. You know, we've talked about him maybe being a reliever. He could take that, you know, if Luke Weaver doesn't come around, you know, it's hard to keep Weaver going in that rotation when you've got perhaps Flaherty going well in Memphis and then Alex Reyes coming back. Some tough decisions that are going to probably have to be made in the next month. And, you know, whether that forces Mo's hands into a trade so he doesn't lose some assets without getting some value for him, or if he just still continues to try to push and shove, and it's kind of like cramming that closet full, you know, and see if you get the door closed. That seems to be kind of feels like what the roster feels like at times. I don't know. I think that Weaver's going to have to, and again, we've seen him be good at the major league level. We're going to have to see him step it up a little bit this coming year, or this coming couple of starts, I think, because otherwise that drumbeat for Alex Reyes is going to be hard to ignore, and he's really about the only one in the rotation right now that you can, you know, you're probably not going to send Michael Walker to the minors, even if there's an option. If Wainwright and Mikolas and Martinez are making up the rest of it, you know, Weaver's about the one that's the most vulnerable right now. And so if he wants to stay in the big leagues, he probably better pitch a little better. That's unfortunate, but true.
The harsh reality of Major League Baseball.
Yeah, and especially in an organization that is so stock full of pitching. I mean, and that's kind of what we've said even with the minor league guys. You know, you've got to or the bullpen guys, you've got to produce because there is somebody ready to take your place, and a quality guy. This is not, you know, Memphis is not made up of cast-off minor major leaguers or guys that have, you know, had some success here and there. It's a very loaded, very talented team and can just about at any position provide something for the big league club.
Yep.
So you've got to be producing or they're going to take away get that the provision. So I don't know. I think the next couple of weeks, as you know, the weather warms up and the schedule gets more consistent and everything else, maybe a pretty good telling thing for Weaver and some of these bullpen guys, and see if we can start to figure out where Alex Reyes really fits into this lineup or into this roster. Before we get into the actual fun part of the show, which I know it felt like a pretty downer sweep by Pittsburgh, we'll do that. We ought to talk about, I think we still need to talk about Matt Carpenter. Matt Carpenter's hitting, after today, hitting 155. He's got a 305 on base because he's walked, you know, 19 times. But, you know, slugging is 274. He's got 6 extra base hits on the year. And even a move to the leadoff spot hasn't helped. And I haven't, I'll pull that up while I let you talk about him. But as we said before we started the show, he's not hitting, which has always been his, you know, calling card, the thing that keeps him in the lineup. He can't field all that great. His throws haven't looked any better from third base than we thought they would. This, you know, idea of a weird motion or a different angle to throw across has not been very successful. it's not like he's going to get by on his, you know, speed or anything of that nature. Oh, here we go. Batting first this year. 4 games, 17 plate appearances. It's hitting 143. He's actually hitting worse in the leadoff spot than he is at any other place in the lineup. So,
there goes that theory.
Yeah, there you go. Well, you thought that jump start was gonna come. I don't know. I mean, I don't know what it would take to get Matt Carpenter to be the super sub bench guy and let Jed Jerko, who's hitting, you know, 350 or whatever he's hitting now in limited time, more regular spots. But I also, I know everybody's been on Carpenter and Fowler. And Fowler this time last year was hitting about the same, and of course took off and did fine for the rest of the year. But I don't know. I mean, we've never really seen Matt Carpenter be this bad for any length of time.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I think the immediate question for me is, how healthy is he really? Mm. Because we went an entire season of Matt Carpenter struggling last year, only to find out, well, he was struggling because his shoulder was so injured that it hurt when he swung a bat and when he threw a ball and probably when he ran too, just because it was that terrible. So, I mean, other than that, he felt fine.
Yeah.
So my initial question is, well, how healthy really is he? Because you can't convince me that the shoulder was not the primary reason Matt Carpenter struggled so much last season. Now, the struggles seem to be exaggerated this year, and I think there's probably part of that that's an approach thing, as Matt Carpenter tries to sort of split the difference between the guy he was in, you know, 2012, 2013, 2014, when he was the on-base guy and the doubles machine, and then who he tried to become in the last 2 or 3 seasons, where he wanted to add some power to his game to fill a need that the Cardinals had in their roster, and that was a guy hitting in the middle of the order. So I think there's part of that, you know, he's sort of caught in the middle as far as that's concerned. I've wondered if he's almost overcompensating on the aggressiveness in order to just sort of retrain his muscle memory, retrain his brain to be more like the guy he came up in the organization as. But I can't help but wonder if there's a bit of an injury issue going on. I mean, he's hitting the ball a little bit harder as of late. He's sort of getting BABIP to death. A lot of balls hit right at guys in the last couple of days. So maybe that'll start to normalize a little bit. But his power numbers are down. His strikeout rate is up. His walk rate's actually a little bit up, which is weird. But, you know, he's just not, he doesn't look comfortable in any at-bat ever. None of his swings look like the sort of easy, fluid, not trying too hard swing that we've seen from him in the past. And I don't know if from the outside we can determine whether that's because of the shoulder, or if it's just because he's just so out of whack in trying to figure out who Matt Carpenter should be for the Cardinals. Now, the poor throws from third base lead me to believe there's some lingering effect of the shoulder issue, whether it's pain or if it's just, you know, a residual lack of strength from whatever he had to do to manage it during the season last year. But I don't know. I mean, it's hard to watch Matt Carpenter right now. That much is for sure.
Yeah, it is difficult. And I mean, besides the injury, it is somewhat fair to ask the question. By the way, Matt Carpenter at the end of April last year was hitting .243 and slugging .414, and was, you know, again, and we were probably complaining about what's happened to Matt Carpenter there. He had 3 homers, 3 doubles. So I guess the extra base hits were about the same, but you know, April comparatively was much better last year, and still not a good one. I mean, it is probably fair to at least ponder the question. I mean, he is 32. He came to the big leagues late. It's possible that this, he's just not going to be the Matt Carpenter that we remember. Yep. And I think we've talked about that some before. You know, you don't want to write anybody off, and obviously he could have a terrible year this year and still have some very successful years going forward. But there are players that come to the big leagues and, you know, burn bright and burn out fast. And, you know, it's possible Matt Carpenter is one of those. Now, I think you're more, it's more accurate that you're going to be right, that you're going to see that he's got that, those injury problems, that he's going to wind up somewhere along the way here on the DL, at least for 10 days or so. And, you know, even if it's a mental health day type of thing, and they'll blame the shoulder and let him sit for a while. But I think without that, you see Matt Carpenter out there every day.
Yeah.
You know, it was surprising to see him sit at least once this weekend, but there's not going to be back-to-back days that you're not going to see Matt Carpenter out there. There's just not. I mean, no matter what he's hitting, he's going to be in the top of the lineup because that's what Mike Matheny's going to do. And I just don't see how that could change.
I think that's as big of a problem as Matt Carpenter not hitting, especially when you have Jed Jerko on the roster, just sort of hanging out on the bench waiting to get a chance to play. It also gives you more defensively. And when that's been a bit of a problem the last couple of days, it's not necessarily a bad idea to put a guy who's actually a third baseman out playing third base. You know, there's enough of a liability on the infield with Jose Martinez at first base, and I, to his credit, I think he's getting better. I think he's making some very obvious improvements. It's just still very much a weak point as far as the defense goes. So then to have Matt Carpenter out there as well, especially if there's something physically going on that is prohibiting him from playing effective defense, there's nothing that he's adding to this lineup on an everyday basis that gives any sort of logic to playing him over Jed Jerko until Matt Carpenter's in a better place, whether it's physically or mentally. And it just, the fact, I mean, Matt Carpenter is going to turn into the 2018 version of Johnny Peralta or Brandon Moss. And that's what I would hate to absolutely see that. But that's the direction we're going in, with Matt Carpenter not being able to figure it out. And Mike Matheny still putting him at the top of the lineup every day. It doesn't make sense to cost yourself that much offensively and that much defensively. It's not as if, you know, he's playing spectacular defense so you can sort of excuse the offensive struggles or vice versa. He's bad at both things right now. So I don't know what purpose it serves other than to, I don't know, play these Mike Matheny head games where he thinks that putting him out there to fail every day is actually good for his confidence, as opposed to giving him a break and letting Jed Jerko do his thing and, you know, give the team the best chance to win, which is what should be his priority.
You would think. And it's not like, Matt Carpenter is Colton Wong in the fact that he's been jerked around or not given a support. Right. I mean, Matt Carpenter has been supported for ever since he came up, and you know, early on it's because he produced. I mean, there's no doubt about it that it helped that he, you know, got off to such a strong start in his career, and it makes it easier for you to say, you know, let's see what we have here versus maybe what the struggles that Colton had. But, you know, I don't think that taking us some, you know, giving him two or three days off in a row is going to make him all of a sudden think that he's, you know, worthless to this team. I think he's going to know that, you know, he's struggling right now, but, you know, things can change and he just has to do a little bit better. I don't know. I still, like you think, you're right. I think he needs to sit some more, at least until he figures out his stroke, but I think the idea is he's got to play to find his stroke. But, you know, I don't know why a guy like that has to be playing, you know, why he can't be hitting seventh or eighth, and let him be a little bit farther out of the way and look at things a little differently. You know, I don't know. Not ever going to happen. And I think that may be part of, what the problems are. You know, if the offense sputters, and at times they've looked okay. You know, still, you know, it's not like they're that team from a couple years ago. I mean, today was the first day they've been shut out this season. So there's still some offense there, but if that ever really becomes a problem, you know, keeping Matt Carpenter at the top of it, and, you know, again, Dexter Fowler's not immune from the criticism either, but a lot of it's going to be focused on Matt Carpenter, and if he's not doing it when Jerko could be, it becomes harder and harder to figure out why he's in the lineup. All right, well, let us end the show today with something a little bit more interesting, hopefully, than a litany of problems with the Cardinals. I believe it was last night, Tara put out a call for some help because, well, Tara, I'll just let you tell it. What are we doing here?
So it's a long sort of winding and uninteresting journey to how I ended up trying to match up the Cardinals lineup with Marvel characters. But it happened, and I was there, and I decided to try to recruit the help of the Twitterverse and figure out which Marvel characters were most likely or most similar to the Cardinals players. And it was really focused on the lineup last night, but that sort of morphed into a much larger picture, who are the Cardinals Marvel heroes. And I got a few responses. I ended up doing some quick Photoshops that I'm not going to lie, I was pretty happy with them.
They're pretty good.
And I've sort of been, I'm working on a couple others just for the fun of it, mostly to distract myself from the bad baseball that was happening. But between the Photoshopping and the chatting and knowing that you're much more well-versed in the Marvel universe than I am, I thought it would be far more interesting to have our powers combined to create the Marvel Cardinals than to just try to do it myself.
Yeah, your Photoshops, I mean, they look like something that Cardinals GIFs would have done. So, you know, they were quality stuff.
That Cardinals GIFs, man, he's one of a kind.
He is, no doubt. But, yeah, it's interesting. You and I were talking a little bit about it beforehand, and I don't know that you know, it's obviously not something that you can dish out and assign to everybody, but the obvious ones, there are some obvious ones. Tommy Pham as T'Challa, the Black Panther, is pretty obvious, I think, there because of, you know, the fact that Black Panther can do just about everything, but also has that, I don't know if attitude is the right word for it, but it's a different situation, and, you know, I think all of the things that encompass that would go with Tommy Pham as well. You have Yadier Molina would be Iron Man because not only does he got all the equipment, but he plays every day, which, you know, obviously is baseball's equivalent. Did you come up with anybody for Captain America?
Captain America was one that I went back and forth on a number of times. I mean, I think in general, I would want to go with Adam Wainwright because he's sort of that all-American guy. But at the same time, it's a little hard this season to make Adam Wainwright Captain America when he's, you know, while he's on the DL.
Well, I mean, I guess if you wanted to, you know, as the storylines and the movies have progressed, and at the end of the last Captain America movie and into the current movie, he's on the run. He's not necessarily part of the list.
It's true.
So, you know, I mean, if you want to do that, he's doing his thing in secret, that kind of stuff. So maybe Adam's, you know, mentoring and things like that, or a place where we can't see it. So, besides, you know, I think nobody can throw the ball like Cap throws the shield more than Adam, so
true.
I would, and I mean, you know, there's what's one of the more famous pictures of Adam Wainwright is the fact that he's had his face painted in an American flag. So
that's,
you know,
true. That's
put all that together. Very, I think you're good there. you know, I know we talked about, you wanted to make Matt Carpenter Captain America.
I did. Yeah. You know, I was sort of going through the list of characters and kept coming back to Matt Carpenter as Captain America. But, you know, again, this season, it's particularly difficult to assign a hero to Matt Carpenter at this point.
I'm thinking, I just came up with this, so it's not fully fleshed out, but I'm thinking maybe you can go with the Winter Soldier. As Matt Carpenter, okay. Because one, he has a broken arm, which might affect Matt Carpenter. He occasionally seems like he's working for the other side, which right now Matt Carpenter's batting average would kind of fit in there. But again, he can do a lot of the things that Captain America does. He has a very and he's very patient. So I think all that works out.
There you go. Well, I like it.
The only other option for Carpenter, as I threw out on Twitter, was Hawkeye because you know of that whole eye at the plate type of thing.
Sure.
That being said, Hawkeye can, doesn't strike out quite as much, probably. So, so let's go Winter Soldier there. Right. Paul DeYoung, that's an interesting. I think Paul DeYoung might be an interesting one. I'm not really sure where to go with that.
Yeah, I couldn't really figure that one out either. And even today, I was again trying to distract myself with Photoshop while the Cardinals were getting perfect gamed, and then DeYoung magically broke it up, so I was hoping for an instant response on Twitter from the people who are more invested in the Marvel universe than I am, and no one really came up with anything there either. That one caused problems as I was trying to go through this list last night.
Let's go with Thor for that, because one, Thor has cut his hair off, which, so we don't have to do the John Gant type thing, the former John Gant, let's be known. But, also, it's that extra, the God of Thunder, the power, and that seems to be what DeYoung has brought this year. I mean, it's kind of the all or nothing approach, and sometimes Thor has that approach as well. I don't know if he goes around talking in, old English or anything like that, but
but he should.
But he should, no doubt. We'll do that. It's tough on somebody like Ozuna, I think, because we just haven't gotten a real good feel for Ozuna. I think for the fact that he was the big acquisition this offseason, it feels sometimes that we forget about him.
Yeah. I think part of it is that he hasn't been off to this torrid start that everyone expected. I think part of it is that there have been just, quite honestly, bigger storylines. But I think a lot of what he brings happens in the clubhouse and not necessarily, he's not the Carlos Martinez that's going to get everybody's attention as far as the fan base is concerned. But it sounds like he has quite the impact internally, whether he's hitting well or not. So you're right, it's a little bit hard to gauge that. Someone on Twitter suggested the Hulk.
That was that's where I was going to go with.
Personally, I know he's not with the team now, but I feel like Tyler O'Neill has to be the Hulk.
That's fair. But
that's fair. Active players, maybe Ozuna could be that guy. But I don't know. I feel like it's a very large personality to assign to someone that we don't really know that well.
That's true. I don't know. That's interesting. You're right. It's tough to say that anybody besides Tyler O'Neill should be the Hulk when you really go with that. We may have to come back to that. I don't know. Maybe Falcon. Because Falcon's got a bit of a personality in the he's always seems to have some one-liners, and he's kind of a good supporting character, which right now Ozuna seems to be. He's not the headliner, obviously. But he kind of fills in, helps out. And seems to be a looser personality. So that could be
something. All right.
Yeah.
I can go with that.
Well, let's see. I think not to, to get too far off, but I think if we're going to, I don't know, you got Spider-Man, do you go with Jordan Hicks or do you go with a guy like Bader for Spider-Man because of the youth?
You could. This is just completely superficial, but I was sort of leaning towards Jose Martinez with Spider-Man, just because I feel like the raw energy and the like ability to, I don't know, just appear in and out of circumstances like Spider-Man does, swinging from building to building. I feel like Jose Martinez would be the personality that would fit there. But that was just sort of off the cuff. I wrote it down and then moved on from it. So I'm perfectly fine with abandoning ship if there's a better option.
That's legit, except for the fact that Spider-Man would catch the ball more. But
well, yeah.
But other than that, I think you're right. I mean, he doesn't have the youth, but he has that youthful personality.
Yeah.
And a guy that, yeah, does seem to
See Jose Martinez walking around the clubhouse fake shooting spider webs out of his sleeves.
That would work.
Right? Like,
yeah. Okay, I get that. I can see that.
Okay, all right.
I'll go with that. So, looking at today's lineup, Greg Garcia could be Ant-Man. Just because he's short, that's easy. And the guy that kind of pops up, does more damage than you think he should.
Right.
Let's see. I'm looking at, we got Vision here as a character, but I'm not really sure what he would fit. Unless it is the Carlos Martinez type. Vision can alter his appearance, so there's that.
Okay, I see where you're going.
But he was, he was worthy enough to pick up Mjolnir, so he's got the ability, he's got a lot of the top-notch abilities. He's a guy that's very difficult to come down, to take down, and, powered by an Infinity Stone, he's, he feels like he'd be an ace of a staff.
Yeah, no, I like it. I think that anything that involves changing his appearance definitely has a bit of an X factor as far as Carlos Martinez is concerned, because we never really know how he's going to show up to the field that day. I like it. Vision. I like it.
All right. I'm scrolling a list of Marvel heroes here and just trying to figure out which ones we haven't used. We have Doctor Strange. I don't know. I feel like Doctor Strange has to be a pitcher just because, throwing, pitches that nobody can see and pitches that move and stuff like
that. Sure.
But I don't know who that would be. What do you think?
Let me see. I'm brushing up on my Doctor Strange bio here real quick.
Well, if he, it's
to make
rich,
sure that
the rich stubborn surgeon type.
Yeah.
Who has the, I don't know. I mean, Jordan Hicks had some moving pitches.
Miles Michaelis is.
I was kind of thinking
quietly.
Yeah,
making his case there.
But he's got the
surgically working his way through a lineup.
Right, and Doctor Strange has to go over to Asia to learn the mystic arts. That's where Michael Michaelis had to go over there to learn how to pitch and to come back. And yeah, we could do that. I think
That's it.
We'll go with that. Go with that. That's pretty good. Pretty good handle on most of those. I mean, there's some others. I mean, there's Scarlet Witch, and there's, well, I guess we should find somebody to be Star-Lord. It's got to be a guy that's cocky. It's got to be a guy that seems to always get into trouble, which would be half the bullpen. I don't know.
Let's see.
Greg Holland got out of more trouble, we could do that, but he doesn't get out of it.
No.
I don't know.
Let's see.
This is not...
cocky, came working and out of trouble. I feel like he's proficient in hand-to-hand combat, so...
Also true.
If anyone...
Being on the 80s music, maybe Jed Jerko
work there? That could be Jed Jerko.
I mean, he doesn't have necessarily the cocky part down, but, sure. You know, he's a guy that can... I feel like he's probably a team leader, even though he doesn't play as much. Obviously a bit older. Not really feels like he's older. I don't know that he actually really is when you think about it. But I'm not completely sold on that one, but...
It's a possibility.
It's a possibility.
Sort of hanging out there.
Yeah.
I feel like we need to find someone for Dexter Fowler, but...
Dexter Fowler.
Right.
Boy, that's a tough one.
I know. And this is another one that I could never figure anyone out for, so...
Boy, that is tough. You've got... I don't think he doesn't fit War Machine. If it's pretty interesting because Dexter's such a personality, and the fact that he smiles a lot it throws it off because there's not a whole lot of superheroes to do that.
That's true.
I don't know.
Well, it's not just me then.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll put that one out to the listeners.
Okay.
And if we get a good one. We'll
circle back to it next week.
Right, we'll mention it next week. Or if you have problems with the ones we've picked,
feel free.
You can let us know. But there we have it. That's our top of the head type of work. We didn't do a whole lot of detail in this, so we won't argue with you if you think there's somebody else. So, and with that, we've run a little bit long, but there's plenty to talk about this week, including superheroes. So
important things.
Right.
The important stuff. Marvel characters.
I mean, this is really just our way of trying to latch on to that, Infinity War bandwagon and try to...
Yeah, just trying to stay relevant.
Right. See if we can up our downloads when we title this one something like, Infinity War spoilers or something like that.
Right. I don't know. Maybe people won't listen to it if we title it that.
No spoilers here.
No spoilers.
Yes. I mean, I have seen it, but we won't spoil it. So, all right. Well, until next week when the Cardinals get a chance to do some interleague play this week for the first time this season. They're going to take on the White Sox, and I believe the Twins are after that. At home, which is a really weird, go to Pittsburgh for three games and come back home for a run. Actually, they have the White Sox and the Cubs with the Twins coming after that Cubs series. So, the White Sox, I don't know that they've got a lot of talent, but you never know, they're not necessarily winning games. But then that series with the Cubs is big. I mean, the Cardinals aren't going to have cold weather to blame this time around. They're going to, and if they can win 2 out of 3, it'd be really nice, but we'll have to see. So hopefully that's what we're talking about next week when we get back at you. But until then, I'm Daniel, and that's Tara. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.